And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Jurassic Pod. I am Eric Corrine. This is the post-WrestleMania, post-Grammys edition of Jurassic Pod. Joining me, as always, live from parts unknown, Holly McKenzie. Holly, how are you?
Parts are known. I'm joining you from Toronto.
It was a bit
was it truly WrestleMania, or did you just make that up?
No, it was WrestleMania. Two night event. Okay. Pat McAfee wrestled. Who else wrestled? Logan Paul wrestled.
Do I know that name because of a specific reason?
No, he's like a talk radio dude.
He did the interview with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, he's
right?
Like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, no thanks. We don't need to talk about that. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, no, because he's now the color commentator on SmackDown. So he got roped into a WrestleMania match. And also Johnny Knoxville of Jackass fame also wrestled. Yeah, against Montreal's own Sami Zayn.
Did you watch this?
No, one night I had plans. I went to Second City at Dawes and Danforth. First, like, real night out with a group of people in a while. Like, we've been out, but just, like, with one or two people at a time. And generally, you know, at a house or outside. This was, like, at a place where people were. In Toronto.
Did people wear masks? How did you feel?
I mean, I guess I'm excluding all of the times I go to cover Raptors games. I'd say it was a higher percentage of mask wearing than at Raptors games, but, you know, still.
That's pretty.
Still
yeah,
strange.
It's not
yeah, it's not a, not a high bar. This isn't. I mean, I guess I'd be lying if I said I'm not judging people, but I'm not condemning them, I guess. Who am I to condemn anybody anyway? Yeah, so that was fun. And then, like, we went out to a patio, which was nice, like a heated patio in the back of a restaurant.
Nice.
So that was cool. But that stopped me from watching WrestleMania Night 1.
Got it.
And then the thing that stopped me from watching WrestleMania Night 2 is the thing we'll be talking about for most of this episode, I suspect.
This is why I thought you made it up. I thought you made up WrestleMania and then mentioned the Grammys, because I was like, why would he lead with anything other than Kyle Lowry's return?
Yeah, Kyle Lowry was back on Monday night. No, tonight is Monday night when we record this. He was back on Sunday night. Days, what do they mean? But before we get there, the Raptors, to give you your update, last podcast of the regular season, Holly. I don't know how you feel about that, but it's happening. The Raptors are 45-33, tied for fifth, but without the tiebreaker, so they're really in sixth place. 2.5 games up on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Their magic number to clinch a playoff spot proper is 2, any combination of 2 Raptors wins and Cavaliers losses. The Cavs have 3 games left. The Raptors have 4 games left. So they just need 3 desirable results in a total of 7 games, if I did my math correctly, which I believe I did.
And I've lost. You've
yeah,
lost
yeah, it's fine. People who pay, who they know what I'm
people who
about.
Do math know yeah. what you're saying.
The Raptors are 14th in offense, 18th in defense. Not 18th in defense, 8th in defense. Took all year, but like the Raptors are basically what we expected in terms of like their rankings. I guess like before the season, I would have guessed they were a bottom half offense team, and I mean, if you look at the half court offense, they sure are. But
Eric,
like,
the beginning of the season on a preview show on CBC Radio, I said that I thought the Raptors could finish as high as fifth, but would probably finish sixth and, you know, not go to the play-in, and I got crushed for that.
Well,
including from our friend James Herbert, who's normally very effusively positive, who said fifth. And for a while there, I was pretty nervous that I looked foolish. But hey, we're in the final stretch, last week of the season, and I think I'm looking okay.
Yeah, I think I put their window between fifth and thirteenth. Yeah,
you covered it all.
I'm just saying, this is where their window is. I predicted somewhere in the middle. I think I didn't predict an exact placing, but I predicted they would lose in the play-in. So it's looking like I'm going to be wrong. It's looking like you have a good chance of being more right than wrong, certainly, and perhaps even absolutely right. And props to that. We'll get into the bigger picture in a moment, but I think it's wise to spend, if not most, certainly a good chunk of time talking about Kyle Lowry's return, a date that Raptors fans, an occasion, I should say, that originally there was a different date, but an occasion that Raptors fans have been looking forward to since the regular season schedule came out, really since they knew Kyle Lowry would be leaving in free agency or a sign and trade. So you were at home. I was in the arena. What stood out to you from what I can only assume is your couch, unless you've gotten more ergonomically correct in your relaxing TV viewing?
Definitely not. Yeah. Over the past 2 years, I've gotten less
ergonomically
correct. More, yeah. And my body feels it. Yeah, do you know?
My desk
gets used once a week, and that's for this podcast. And the rest of the week, my work is done on the couch, which is not great. But here we are.
I might be getting a standing desk soon, but that's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I hate them. I can't do that.
I don't really want one, but I think I need one, so it's just it's gonna be a thing I try.
Well, from my couch,
yeah,
where I was watching the game, I need to ask you, did you cry?
No.
Any kind of moments where you thought you might
cry? I'm not saying that to be too cool for school.
No
like Kyle Lowry was, but I just didn't. Now I we don't need to talk about what I was about to talk about. It takes a lot sometimes to make me cry. And like during Kyle Lowry's whole tenure, I mean, of course, I'm emotionally invested, but my job is to, you know, impartially document what's going on. So maybe, I mean, it's not always that easy to do that, but...
Yeah, I'm going to challenge you there, because I think that you can. I think you can emotionally react to situations.
Yeah, no, that I'm not
without being while still being impartial. But
I agree with that. But my job is to impartially document. Does that mean I don't get like emotionally invested? No, like I've whipped enough pens at desks when a Raptor makes a bad play, or I think I've told this story, but I think I just stood up and swore when Kawhi dunked on Giannis in 2019. I can't even tell you what emotion that was, but that was just my emotional reaction, which is to your point. But I did not have that. I guess
going to ask, have you cried at anything in the arena since you've been covering it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Shocker, I have.
Only my own feelings. Nothing Raptors related.
I've had a few of those moments. One was the Vince tribute.
The impromptu.
That got me.
Against Memphis, yes.
Obviously, DeMar's return. Mess. Going to the finals, beating the Bucks.
Yeah.
Obviously. And then, of course, the most unexpected, but probably the most on-brand, was when Jonas Valanciunas showed up in the playoffs. I just didn't expect it. I didn't expect to see him. And then I saw him in his leather jacket, and I just kind of burst into tears in the gondola. But it's fine. And people who say no crying in the press box, well, whatever. It's fine. We're
crying. Crying is better than cheering.
I don't cheer. It's fine. Emotions are good.
Yeah, this isn't an anti-emotions podcast. I'm just saying – that I didn't cry. I don't want to lie to the people.
I was curious. I wanted to know if anyone did cry yesterday.
I didn't see anybody. I mean, I'm sure people in the crowd did. But anyway, did you cry at home?
Yes. Did I cry 20 minutes ago reading your story from last night where you had a bullet point twice in one bullet point?
That's called efficiency. We have to come up with a stat for that.
Where you told us that...
CPB, cries per bullet.
After Kyle's press conference, post-game press conference, because there were two and both were amazing, you said that he took a call from DeMar. Oh, my heart. Just like stab it with good love feelings. And also he talked about bringing his sons with him and how important that moment
was. I even asked that question, Holly.
That was the moment like during the on-court ceremony that got me, obviously. I don't think that's a surprise. It was just a beautiful moment. His kids are so, oh my gosh, they're precious. They're so grown up compared to, like, I mean, we haven't seen them in 2 years because of the pandemic, and it was just really sweet to see them there with him and see them watching the tribute. And you know how much it means to Kyle to have them there. And oh my goodness, can we just talk about everything, Eric? I want to talk about it all.
That's fine, but I on that it was actually a FaceTime call from DeMar. And Doug Smith was there, and Kyle brought Doug into the conversation. Doug was talking to DeMar. He's like, "Oh, how's it going, young man?" And you know, Doug is like a true professional, and like when somebody is being super loud on deadline, Doug and me too. I'm not above this, but I think like Doug is perhaps more gruff. Like, we'll get upset that people are being too loud. But who came in after Kyle? I think Victor Oladipo came in to speak after Kyle Lowry spoke. But like Kyle was like having Doug on his FaceTime call with DeMar, and they were still in the media room. And you could just see like the Heat PR staff like trying to push the conversation outside, but like clearly not wanting to ruin whatever Kyle wanted to do in that moment, which at this moment included bringing Doug Smith into a conversation with DeMar DeRozan. It was just funny having Doug be at the center of one of those moments instead of like trying to shut it down. Anyway, hopefully Doug doesn't mind me telling that story, but it's told now.
That's also a testament to Doug's place on the beat that... Yeah. Kyle would want to bring him into that moment.
Yeah, he didn't bring me into that moment. He did say Eric Kareen, which, you know, that's the first time it's ever been confirmed that he knows my last name, so that's good. Before we get onto things that aren't me, I will say that like giving somebody like a fist bump when they are wearing that championship ring, very difficult.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's a ring. Also, when I did my little, you can't see me, obviously. One of these days, this webcam will be fixed. But when I said stab me in the heart with love, when we were talking about that, I jabbed myself in my sternum with my thumb knuckle. And now that hurts. So
we've made some mistakes here today, but we're going to try to do no more harm for the rest of this podcast.
But anyway, you saying that made me think, imagine getting like hit in the chest with that ring on by someone who had that ring on. Kyle came and he wore the ring. Oh, as soon as you saw that, to me, that was like the best I love you too flex to the crowd, to everybody. Like, we did this together. I did this here. You know, I loved it. It was so sweet.
Yeah, the whole evening, after the video, it actually, to me, it felt basically like a normal game, but like given the, I don't think adrenaline's the right word, but like that the emotional apex or climax or whatever came like in before the game started, like there was a weird flat feeling to me throughout a lot of the game, but that first few minutes, I kind of wish they would have just let fans keep on cheering and like start the games a few minutes late. I understand there's, you know, trains to keep on on the tracks there, but it was really cool. And that he brought his sons to center court. You know, I know he did that mostly for his sons, Carter and Cameron, but I think that helps emphasize, and it's something he talked about, that, you know, this was a home and this is where the family, like, they didn't live there full time or anything, but this is where their family grew up together and called mm-hmm. home for, like, the beginning of their kids' lives, and mm-hmm. to the point where they're, you know, nearly tweens, Holly. They're almost tweens.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. There was a moment on the broadcast. I don't know if you noticed this in the arena, but they had like a little box camera on the screen that was just Kyle, like during the warm-ups and stuff. So it was just like in the corner of the screen. There was a camera. Yeah, okay. That was just
so like a picture-in-picture,
yeah. Yeah. Sorry, that was the term that I could not get my brain to wrap around. It's been that kind of day for me, as Eric can attest. First of all, watching that, I was thinking this would be my absolute nightmare. Like, yeah. Imagine just knowing there's a camera close up on you but there was a few moments that cracked me up about his sons. You could see him motioning to his sons, like when they were by the bench, like, come over. And probably just because, like, there was so much commotion on the court, I think his sons were, like, not sure if they were allowed to, like, you know, just cut through the court, and he kept saying, come on. And it was just like such a dad moment, like a parent trying to like get their kids, like, just get over here. And it was such a cute moment. Obviously they did end up over there, and I'm glad that it all worked out, but it was like a real, just like a stars. They're just like us, like behind the scenes glimpse into that moment for him. You could tell it meant a lot.
Well, I mean, it must be hard to get your kids' attention. Like at the best of times, it's hard to get kids' attention.
But in that setting, too, right?
In like front of 19,800 people.
Most of them wearing your dad's jersey or signs with his face on it, and are screaming at him.
Yeah, I don't, like, I doubt there was, like, like, he probably got a heads up on, like, what the general order of things would be, but there's no dress rehearsal. It's not mm-hmm. like you get a mm-hmm. rehearsal dinner like you get at your wedding sometimes, depending on the wedding. And so to assume that, I don't know how old they are now, like 11 and 9, 10 and 8, something like that, to assume that they'll be able to just intuit what's going on, like, I can empathize. I can never remember the difference between empathize and sympathize. One means you've gone through it and so you can relate to the person. The other means you haven't gone through it, but you can still feel for the person.
I think I sympathize
with him. I cannot really truly empathize with him. This is what we're here for, is to define words. But yeah, it was a cool night. The video was
great.
What
was your favorite moment of the video tribute?
That's a good question. I remember that his opening press conference. Mm-hmm. Do you remember who the other Raptor was who was also being introduced that day?
Landry?
Yeah. And I remember, again, we're making it about me. I wrote a big feature on Kyle, which is still one of the pieces that, like, I'll just say it was like the first piece or like one of the first maybe three pieces I wrote in this job that's like, okay, maybe I'll be able to do this half decently, was like my introductory piece on Kyle. And in the comments, I remember saying, somebody saying, is there going to be one of these on Landry too? and like, that's not a ridiculous question, but it's like, you do understand Kyle is more important to the future of this franchise than Landry Fields, right? Like, even.
And also you bent yourself over backwards trying to get these quotes, and you actually felt good about it for once.
So anyway, the shots of him, and I think if memory serves, he's in a bow tie. Like, he's mm-hmm. clearly mm-hmm. like a bit chubbier, less like pre-Kyle is going to, what was that hashtag? Skinny Kyle. Like, it was pre-skinny Kyle. That happened over that one off season, I think, post the Washington sweep, if
Kyle O'Quinn posted the photo, remember? Yeah.
Great moments. And I didn't hear that in any memory, Lowry remembrances. So seeing that and seeing him talk at that press conference, I think that was cool. For me, you have Casey voice in the video. The thing about it is, like, I just watched it again this morning and I noticed it was him. While I was there, I did not, I was trying to place who it was, but I couldn't tell who it was. I'm like, that voice sounds familiar. Which coach is it? But I thought for some reason it was an opposing coach. Now, I mean, I guess it was, but anyway, go on. Like, I mean, talk on that, Holly.
Well, I was just really surprised to hear Casey's voice. I mean, it makes sense because it's obviously over Kyle's tenure, but I wasn't expecting to hear it, you know, for many reasons. Yeah. Just wasn't. And when I heard it, I was really excited, and it just made me think of those early years and that series against the Brooklyn Nets. And you mentioned it in your piece today that obviously the image of Kyle on the floor after missing, getting his layup blocked, and DeMar consoling him on the floor with him, him going through George Hill's legs was a perfect shot that I didn't expect to be in there. And then obviously, you know, the charges. But my favorite part was when they re-showed the clip of his sons announcing him from when they were
Bubble. No, that's probably just the correct answer, because I actually had forgotten about that, the bubble introductions, and that was legitimately cool.
Seeing his sons, because like for that, they also had the picture-in-picture with Kyle in the corner as they were showing the tribute on the screen. So you could watch the tribute of his sons announcing him, and then the picture-in-picture showed Kyle on the bench with his sons beside him watching themselves announce him, and they got to like see how happy Kyle was in that clip. That was really, really sweet. It was great.
Yeah, it was
a really, really great job. Great video.
On our rundown, you have a question that said, what was my favorite part of reporting on the Kyle return? And I think in general, and it's not so much the reporting of it, but like as somebody who covered his whole career in Toronto, my favorite part is that he knew this was about him, and like he didn't act like it wasn't about him, and he didn't act too cool for it. Like, you know, he was sort of being the star, wearing the nice suit, wearing the sunglasses, you know, properly accessorized, but, you know, he didn't like hide behind a layer of, you know, false, like, let's get this over with, or we're really going to do this. Like, he knew it meant a lot to a lot of people. Like, I'm sure it meant a lot to him, but, you know, it was an occasion, and sometimes Kyle Lowry doesn't like occasions, and he's just, I feel like such an old man saying he's grown up, but I say he's grown up like any of us have grown up. He's grown up to the point where he considers more than just how it might make him feel, but he knows what that night meant to everybody in the stands, but also the people around the arena. For so long Kyle would have found a way to be a bit askew or to be too cool for various
parts of
that night,
and to not be the center of attention, because he usually doesn't. Like, you ask Kyle about himself, you're gonna get a nothing answer. You ask Kyle about his teammates, he'll give you an incredible answer. Yeah. He's never been about like wanting to be the center of attention, but yeah, he definitely recognized that this was a really important moment, and I think it meant a lot to him. And I also think the way the past 2 years have shaken out just globally makes you look at things different, because he wins his championship here. And then the next year, like when everyone came back for the next season, we had no idea that a game against, he was asked this in his pregame press conference, that his last game ever in a Raptors uniform in Scotiabank Arena would be a random March game. February game against the Hornets before they went West. Like, no one could have known that would happen, and then the next 2 years would happen, that the team wouldn't be back here, that he, you know, and then obviously this year there were reasons why he couldn't have come to previous games, that the previous game that was supposed to be his return for personal reasons. And I think that time away really does make you realize, like, you never know when a moment may not get to come around again. So he knew this was a huge moment. He only gets to come back once as the first time. And it meant a lot to a lot of people, and it meant a lot to him. And I'm really glad his sons were with him. And it, you could tell it meant a lot. And I don't know if you saw the clip, the NBA posted it. You may have been in the background, I'm not sure, but it was after the game. They were filming him like walking off the court.
Yeah.
And he had the ball, and which you said was for assistant coach Chris Quinn, because this is what Kyle does.
Of course, he did. He said there were two game balls, one for Chris Quinn and one for Fred. But he also winked both times he said that. So I don't know how I'm supposed to decipher any of that.
Well, you know, I was listening to the Will Liu show just earlier, and Alex Wong on that show, I was going to ask you actually just for what you said that Kyle grabbed the game ball and walked off with it. But then there was a second game ball that he like kicked over to Jennifer Quinn. And he said, I wonder if he got that for Fred.
That's what he said. So yeah,
maybe in fact he did, which if he did, that would be, again, the most Kyle thing ever. And one of my favorite things about that man is that he will never let someone's moment go without trying to celebrate them and you know, capture that for them, which perfect. But as he was walking off with the ball, the NBA social team was filming him, and they asked him what it meant. And he said, you know, it meant a lot to me. And then he said, this place is home. Like, it'll always be home. Got me again after the game, because it just was real and it was sweet. And I think the biggest thing for fans is that you want the player, whether it's Kyle or whoever it is, when there's a relationship like this with a player and a city, fans just want that player to know how much they're loved. And for sure, without a doubt, Kyle knows how much he's loved. And that was what's really cool about last night.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about it all, and Gourmet Spud tweeted this, friend of the show, I guess. I don't know. it's like he tweeted, like, I was sure so many times the Raptors-Lowry relationship would end poorly. And like as recently as like trade deadline 2019, that could have been true, you know? Like, and you know, I think after the fact, Masai said, like, he and Kyle are actually quite alike, which is, you know, maybe why there's been some butting of heads over the years. But, like...
But also, like halfway incredible through, respect.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it took a while to get there.
Yeah.
But, like, halfway through this relationship, you know, 7 years through this relationship, it definitely could have ended in a bitter way, and that it didn't, like... takes a bit of luck, but it's a testament to the people involved and like constantly adapting enough to leave room to succeed. And again, like it's a one of those stories where both sides needed each other to get to the place they wanted to go. And anyway, it was quite amazing. Really nice night. I was backstage, in the back of the house to see him give those hugs to Masai Ujiri and Wayne Embry. It's a night, certainly one of the more memorable ones from this year and just covering the team in general. We should probably talk about basketball unless there's any final thoughts you have on that.
No, we love Kyle.
Yeah.
I'll say it for you since you're impartial.
Yeah.
It can be attributed to me instead. He's the best.
The Raptors lost that game despite the Heat.
Who cares? Is what I wrote in the rundown.
The Heat did not have Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, Dwayne Dedman.
Oh, yes. We need to mention PJ in his flowered hoodie. I think he was wearing shorts. Was he wearing shorts?
I feel like he was.
Maybe I'm. That could be. I'm not. I can't verify that at this moment. But he was wearing like a really like patterned, bright hoodie. He was filming the entire Kyle video and reaction, and he posted it to his Instagram immediately. like I'm talking 5 seconds after it aired, he had like 6 stories in a row on his Instagram, which again just shows how much Kyle is loved. Also, Jimmy Butler had posted like a five photo story of Kyle calling it Kyle's day, like leading into the day, which I thought was really sweet. You can just tell that his teammates love him because how could you not? Anyway, continue. Yeah. Sorry, let's talk about basketball.
Sorry. Kyle was pretty great.
He was pretty great.
16.
First quarter, Fred just coming out like gunning.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And then also Fred in his post game saying, I wanted to give him my best. He deserved that. Also got me because those two are just great.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Talk about basketball. I won't interrupt.
Maybe we should just call the podcast. Go ahead. Talk about basketball. Yeah, the Heat found a way. And the Raptors defense, as Nick Nurse said after the game, probably, I mean, the second half, they let up 59, 59 or 69, might have been 69 points. In the loss to Miami, and that's concerning. I mean, part of it was like some guys got hot, like Oladipo got hot, Max Strus got hot, and that's going to happen. I think the bigger concerns are sort of what happened to start the fourth quarter, where they allowed Omer Yurtseven to score three straight buckets at the rim. Just some stuff that you hope would not be happening at this point of the season, especially against a good team, but not like a offensive juggernaut at the best of times, and one missing a few of its most effective players. I mean, in terms of offense, probably Jimmy's the only guy that really hurt them, but he's a pretty big guy. yeah, so that's got to be the main concern coming out of that game, aside from also the Heat, you know, no matter who's playing, they're going to put together a responsible game plan, and they shut off Fred after a huge first half, and the Raptors just didn't, I'm not going to say they were there and like not getting to their stuff necessarily, but they certainly couldn't make the Heat pay for that strategy enough, and maybe a little hesitance in a few spots that, you know, this is how you lose to a team that on this night was, you know, certainly not at its best, and that was not the Raptors' best game.
Yeah, second half was pretty bad. it was not great. I do have to admit that I was doing some flipping through the third quarter because I was watching the women's championship game as well. Forgive me. But yeah. Every time I was flipping over, it wasn't great.
Yeah, they
the
were
difference just wasn't there. Like the difference between the first half and the second half was kind of.
And I think here's a multi-game thing, and by multi-game I mean a two-game thing, literally multiple of one, two. going back to the Raptors, thoroughly forgettable 13-point win in Orlando. Ban Raptors Magic games, please. But
I got the serious like vibes of Tampa in that game and was just like, this is reminding me of Tampa. I don't want to go back. Let's not do this ever again.
But the one, through line is the Raptors got next to no production, offensive production at least, from their bench in either of those games. And that in the first game, that leads to OG Anunoby being on the floor and taking that hit and having the thigh contusion that cost them the game on Sunday, and maybe more. He's questionable for the game against Atlanta on Tuesday. But more concerningly, like it felt like the bench was coming around and they were getting into a bit of a rhythm where everybody knew their place. And this isn't a bench that's going to reliably put up 40 points for you a night or anything like that. And that's not what they need. Like the Raptors put all their best scorers into the starting lineup. They're not bringing a Tyler Hero off the bench, but they do need that bench to be able to, as the old saying goes, hold serve. And Nick Nurse just could not find any lineups to do that. And I think that's your concern, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's especially concerning when, we've talked so much about the minutes that the main guys on this team have played. And when you have to bring back starters in the fourth, that's really tough.
Yeah, and they paid for it. Like that's not, I mean, it sucks that it's Anunoby again. Like, he continues to take on injuries that all seem like, aside from the strain last year, the calf strain, like, these are all pretty much fluke injuries that he's sustaining. But you can't, I mean, it's at various points, we know the deal. We've talked about minutes enough. It's, you know, sometimes I would have liked to see Nick Nurse, you know, extend the bench a little bit. But the games, I mean, we know exactly what the games mean right now. And
you're not in sixth if you don't do what you've done.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And anyway, I can't put this on Nurse. Like, I like, those guys... Like, the rotation is small enough that those guys in those roles have to be bringing a baseline of energy and production. And, you know,
yeah, the consistency there is a worry, I think, just because, I mean, you look at how important it is right now for this team to have production off the bench. And then, I mean, take it to the next level in a week. It's only going to become more important that everyone is playing with the right amount of energy and effort that you just mentioned. So yeah, like, I don't know that I said, when I wrote this in the rundown, I said, you know, win in Orlando, I've already forgotten about it. Have you? And then when I was talking about the Heat, I said, who cares that they lost, because it was the Kyle night. And the Raptors have played really, really well over this past stretch. I think they're like 11.
Yeah, like the past 3 weeks, the past 4 weeks, they've been like, since the beginning, the first few games of the All-Star break when they got killed and before, you know, leading into Fred's 5-game absence. Since then, since that his return against San Antonio, pretty much, they've been a really, really good team for the most part. But, like, you can see how quickly, you can see how shaky the foundation is when, like, you're 6 through 8 guys. You know, one is Kem Birch, who's dealing with his own health issues and is not like an explosive offensive player. Then you have Chris Boucher and Precious Achiuwa, who are like sort of fundamentally boom or bust players, and who's like decision. I think like Boucher has transcended that certainly at times this season, but like he's mostly an energy player, and some days that's just not going to produce the same results as it will other days, which is fine. But there's no, yeah. So other than Thad Young, who I think is going to give you a baseline of, you know how and defensive responsibility and causing some turnovers.
His pass last night?
Yeah. I loved it more before the second I remembered he was left-handed. So like it was actually... he was throwing it with his like dominant hand, but still,
I said with his right hand, but I meant
his dominant hand. Yes. But it was still an amazing pass. And, you know, as long as Thad Young, I think I've seen, and this isn't to criticize his decision-making. I think he just doesn't have the speed to handle the ball in the fast break anymore. If you can help it. like you don't get to choose who's handling it in the fast break all the time. But there were a few rough turnovers, I will say, with him in the last two games. But in general, you can count on him to come on for pretty much any of the starters and find a way to fit in. It's, can you get 2 reserves? Can you get 3 reserves on the floor at the same time and continue to play well? And this is all kind of funny because, you know, I went into the week wondering aloud about the starting lineup. I wrote about it after who did they beat earlier in the week? Before
Minnesota, the game that we thought they were going to lose.
Yeah. So I wrote about it after the Minnesota game, and then the starting lineup, so-so against Miami, but very good in the game in Orlando. Mm-hmm. The only usable lineup, pretty much. So yeah, when you look toward a 7-game series against a playoff team, a top 4 team in this conference, that the Raptors were already going to be underdogs, you're just, I mean, I'm certainly reminded of really how difficult that's going to be and how small the margin of error is.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just looking. I was just looking at the notes for the game against Minnesota. Since we just talked of all the negatives, we probably should just touch on that game because we had both predicted the Raptors would go 2-1 this week with a loss to Minnesota and wins against the Magic and the Heat. They did go 2-1, but they lost to
Miami,
the Heat, to the Heat. Only the Heat. That game against the Wolves was a blowout win. They won 125-102. It didn't even feel that close.
After a terrible first quarter, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And Pascal finished with a triple-double. He had 12 points, 10 rebounds, and 13 assists. And that one will not be taken away from him by the stats crew after the fact, which was awesome. So after one game, after scoring 40 points, he comes back with a triple-double just to show the versatility there for all NBA Spicy P Pascal. Yeah, no, we're not going to.
He has a strong case.
I think so too. And also in that game, Trent had 29 and OG had 22. And
OG's been shooting the hell out. It sucks to see him go out, OG, because he was shooting really, really well since he came back. And like, you know, it's hard to say with contusions. We've seen how long they can last on different parts of the body. And you eventually, at some point, you just need to get into that. Like, you need reps to get used to playing those minutes more so defensively. Like, because his offensive role has been cut back, like, except for the occasional, like, post-op opportunity or ISO opportunity. Like, he's certainly not doing as much now as he was earlier in the year for, you know, he was just out for a while. And Siakam has excelled so much. And Scottie Barnes is taking up more of the offense than, you know, you thought at the beginning of the year. But, like, in that Minnesota game, granted, the Raptors shot the hell out of the ball, but like when you get the ball to the weak side and it's like Gary and OG deciding whether to pass to one another or shoot the three, as opposed to Gary and Chris Boucher, let's say, like that makes a huge difference. Or Gary and Thad Young, like that makes a huge difference. And first of all, you know, for those drivers, theoretically creating that space, and if they elect not to give it to them, you have two real weapons there. And so make no mistake, they need all of their top guys healthy.
It really felt like the spacing was improved with since OG had returned. That was like the biggest thing that stood out to me. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Continue.
No, I think that's generally my thought. Pascal Siakam continues to play really well. There's, again, like the Miami game gives me enough pause that like when a professional ass team does something to send a bunch of attention toward him or to make it hard on him, do the Raptors have the mechanisms to either free him up or to make the defense pay elsewhere? And like, I thought Scottie Barnes did a pretty good job of taking the shots that were there for him on Sunday. I believe he took 16 shots, which I think Van Vliet and Siakam ended up passing him. But for a large portion of that game, he had taken the most shots on the team. And, you know, I mean, that's not what the Raptors, you know, if they were to draw up their ideal shot distribution before the game, that's not what they would want. But I think there is an element of, you know, you can't dictate how a team's going to play you. And it's more important that Scottie step into those shots. And I didn't think he was forcing much of anything, maybe one or two bad shots in there, but nothing big. And I thought he was pretty damn good in that game again. But yeah, like the Raptors are going to play a really good defensive team in the first round of the playoffs. A lot of those are well equipped to put pressure on the perimeter. Maybe like only Philadelphia isn't, because Joel Embiid generally hangs back, and now that's terrifying in its own right. But the Raptors need to. It's just like the movement and the spacing when everything isn't perfect is just not. Again, it's the margin for error thing. There's no. they're not good enough to just be okay in those facets. They have to be right on their marks, making cuts at the exact right time, and there's just, it's not there yet. I don't know what else to say, but you know, the biggest flaw of this team is still a flaw. It's half court offense. Sorry.
Well, I was feeling really good until you.
But that's the bar, right? Like, they're going
to
be.
Listen,
we
also do have to just mention one more thing about the Kyle Knight. I'm sorry, you mentioned Scotty. We didn't mention this before. The moment after the game where Kyle embraced Scotty and, you know, had some words for him, that was really cool. It was like one era to.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing about that is like him. It's him. Use your pronouns, Eric. Kyle. Saying that, like, Scotty will fit in perfectly in Toronto mm-hmm. because of his passion and how hard he plays. And that's, like, again, it's a commentary on himself. And, like, they got a championship, so duh. But, like, mm-hmm. he knows what made him so beloved here. And he can, like, even though, like, Kyle and Scotty, like, not really similar. I think they're more similar than their body types would suggest. But, like, mm-hmm. but not similar in any traditional way, but there is a spiritual stylistic overlap to some degree, sort of like an attitudinal overlap, even though
is attitudinal a word?
We'll see, but like even though like one's smiling all the time and one's scowling all the time, like it's all driven by sort of the same sort of, you know, competitiveness. It is a word.
Yeah.
Attitudinal, relating to attitudes.
All right.
So yeah, that was cool. And I think it made its way into my story today at theathletic.com.
Subscribe to The Athletic.
I like that I don't have to prompt you to say that anymore.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
But yeah, like there's no easy first round opponents. There's no bad. Now that the Brooklyn Nets are not going to be the Raptors' first round opponent, there is no bad first round defensive team that they're going to play. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Teams know what the Raptors want to do. The Raptors are still growing, especially when they don't have their starting five out there. There's always going to be a player or two who isn't necessarily super comfortable with making the next decision very quickly. And that's why the Raptors want to get in these games, right? They want their players to feel that. And it's important that they feel that. And if they can overcome it, that would be amazing. But even if they can't, that is also essential in their minds and in my mind to the development of this core.
I don't have anything to add. I agree. I'm just letting you go.
Yeah, I didn't want to make this a bummer, but like that's what this is that's what this is all for, is so these guys can learn like both like the feel of big playoff type or playoff games, but also the basketball, the X's and O's, because the game changes not just from a feel and vibes perspective, but from a literally how you have to play perspective. It will be fascinating to see. We will probably, you know, talk a ton about this next week, so I should stop going on this rant, but it will be...
Yeah, I'm about to cut you off because you're ready.
It will be fascinating to see about, you know, the way the Raptors want to play in defense and cause all those turnovers and get out in transition, whether they can do that to even a close degree to what they're able to do in the regular season. But we'll get more into that next week.
Okay, you're cut off.
Yeah.
That was not in the rundown, and I felt like you could have done a full hour just on your thoughts on that.
Coming next week.
I did want to mention
one thing. We'll pull it out for a trailer.
our question last week about mortifying moments.
Yeah, that we wanted Herbie to walk us through gently.
Yeah, I thought of two. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah.
Sure. I wasn't sure. So one was with friend Dwayne Watson, who is usually a fixture around the arena.
Yeah.
And it dates back to the first OVO concert festival, the very first one.
Yeah.
We went to that last minute and it was very exciting. And then after the show, we went out for dinner, like a late dinner after the show.
Spice Road?
And no, Seven West, actually. 24 hours, Seven West is very late. And we were very excited because it was a great show, da da da. And I had ordered nachos, and it was very busy that night, but I had ordered nachos, as I almost always do when I go out to eat, because I have such a refined palate, as you know. And we were kind of talking about our favorite moments of the show and reenacting moments, and I was really excited, and I was like, and then when whatever, Kanye's no longer a source of pride for me.
We all loved Kanye at some point. Continue.
We did. But you know, throw your diamonds in the sky if you're feeling the vibes. And I threw my hands up and I caught our server, and they knocked over our entire nachos on the table next to us.
Not great.
I felt like I wanted to be swallowed by the floor, like just disappear. That was really, really embarrassing. And then my second moment, which is sort of related because it was me being clumsy again. I feel like I'm normally not a super clumsy person. However, maybe I just think that I'm not. I was on a flight back to Toronto from Nova Scotia. As we established last week, I'm not a great flyer, kind of nervous. So I decided, oh, I'm going to try some wine. Wine will calm me down. But I asked them, can I please just have a little bit? Like, I'm not a big drinker, you know. Yeah. I also hate getting a huge glass and then you kind of have to wash the glass. You know what I mean? Like, just give me a little drink if I'm getting a drink.
I don't know.
Whether it's usually Coke.
I have never once thought that. Continue.
You've never once thought what?
Just give me a little drink. Give me a big drink. Continue.
No, like when they ask if I want water, or like usually I get Coke, even if it's early in the morning, because it feels like a treat.
I relate. That's the same reason.
And I usually ask for just like half a glass, because I just, yeah. Anyway, cool. So I asked for like half a glass, just half a glass of wine. And it was red wine, and it was sitting on the table. And what did I do? I bumped that glass and knocked it into the lap of the man sitting next to
me. Oof, rough one. Was he wearing white?
He was wearing khaki, so it was very visible, very red. Again, I wanted to cry. I felt so awful. And this was like, you know, maybe 35 minutes into the flight. So, yeah, I felt awful. Felt terrible. Apologized profusely. He was so nice. Like, oh, whoever, I don't know who this man was, obviously. But if ever I had the opportunity to apologize to him again, I would, because he took it in stride. He was so, you know, accepting of my apology, told me not to worry about it, but you could tell he was pretty cheesed inside, because he now had to sit with like this wet lap of red wine all over his light pants.
At least it wasn't a longer flight. Speaking of cheesed, I thought you were going to bring up the pizza in the media room incident where the door got stuck.
No,
don't want to go there.
Go. No.
Okay.
That was bad.
Holly had
once in the once,
go
once,
ahead.
Yeah, you, once in the Raptors media room, there's this like what do you call the thing? It's like a.
It's like a. It's yeah, like a turntable. Not a turntable. Now, neither of us knows what it's called.
It's a metal box with glass, and you open it, and there's pizzas that spin around it, like a rotisserie pit.
Yeah, except for pizza. Yeah,
it's always at the. It's always in the media room. It was the opening game of the season. It was against the Pistons, and I tried to open the door, and I think because I'm shorter than most of the people there, my angle was off, and when I opened the door, all five pizzas. Slid off
the secret. The secret. Yeah, that's what I did in real time too. As Holly won't be.
They slid off the racks. Hot pizza coming at me, and I didn't know what to do. So I like screamed because I needed help, and all of the men in that media room, because obviously there's more men than media in the media room. Conversation for another day. All of the men just turned, watched. Laughed, as Eric can attest to, while Lori Ewing ran over, like sprinted over from the other side of the room to help me, like pick up these pizzas and like shove it back in the thing. That was really mortifying, and I've been reminded of that like years later.
Well, the pizza thing isn't there right now, but we did it.
Maybe I am clumsy.
We did learn an important lesson that day, in that opening that pizza thing is a two-hand job, because it doesn't just naturally pull open. You need to like use the other hand to stabilize the base so that it can unlatch properly. I'm sure people are glad that we spent this much time talking about all the times Holly.
Really,
no, it's okay. Let's get to a few questions before we say goodbye for the regular season. Dave G. Bradley asks, what is this podcast called? It's called Jurassic Park. Thanks for asking. Ashley, AshRH82 asks, is OG cursed? Holly?
No, we're not going to talk about people being cursed. That's awful. I understand why the question would be asked, but no, he's not cursed. He just has had a string of unfortunate events.
I mean, I don't really believe in curses, so my answer is no. He certainly seems to pick up a lot of fluky injuries, but that's not the same thing. Orlean. Something like that, asks, if the Raptors clinch sixth, do you think they'll rest Fred, Pascal, and Scotty before the playoffs? Fred, yes. I think there's a good chance he won't play in the Houston game regardless, would be my guess. That's the back-to-back on Friday. Mm-hmm. Pascal, I'm sure they will cut down on minutes, if not the whole thing, if not giving him a game off. Scotty, they're not going to play him 45 minutes in a meaningless game against the Knicks at the end of the season, if that game is, like, meaningless. But I think that they probably wouldn't give him a game on. We'll see. If there's nothing to play for, the minutes would be very limited, I think. How about you?
I think I would lean more toward them giving Scotty a game if everything is decided.
I guess the question is, what is everything? Is everything clinching a playoff spot, or is everything like they know what seed they are?
They know what seed they are.
So, like, if they can still get fifth, but they know at worst they'll finish sixth in the Houston or New York games.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think that could depend on how everything else looks.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, if that's the scenario.
Right.
Oh, like you mean at the top of the standings and who they're playing.
Yes.
I don't think the Raptors are going to... First of all, you can't do it. Like, it's going to be... It's so close that it seems unlikely that...
Doesn't make sense to try for something in particular. But I don't know. Like, I feel like if...
I think at some point they might be fine with the sixth seed. I don't think that...
That's what I mean.
I don't think they're going to go all out for the fifth seed. Whether that means they would give Fred, like, a whole game, like, two games in a row off if they indeed sit him against Houston, I don't know. But I think that they'll definitely err on the side of caution there. Yes.
Yeah, well, I think that they know, or, you know, if they know that they're going to be sixth, then that's the way it's going to shake out, or at least sixth. I just think with Scotty, for me, I kind of err on giving him time if you can, just because it has been a long season. A very long season for all rookies, but especially rookies that are playing as much as he is compared to his last college season. So, yeah, you want people to be fresh going into that next season, that postseason, if we can.
Yeah, so let's get on to this week because that will determine what we're talking about next week. Hopefully not a playing game. the Chicago Bulls prediction time. Your favorite part of Jurassic Pod, the Chicago Bulls prediction time. Milwaukee at Chicago tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Who's going to win?
Milwaukee.
The next day, back to back, Boston in Chicago. Who's going to win?
Chicago.
On Friday, Charlotte in Chicago.
Probably Charlotte, even though I think Chicago, just to like mess with my brain.
Well, you've got to call it one way or the other.
Chicago.
Chicago. You heard it. Chicago. they had the season in Minnesota in a game that might mean nothing to Minnesota, might mean nothing to Chicago.
I think that Minnesota will win that game.
So you're calling Bulls 2-2. I think like Bulls 2-2 in general is a reasonable prediction, but that means the Raptors have to go 3-1 to pass them. So can they? We've got Atlanta on Tuesday, Philly, Danny Green, 3 years later, ring night on, on Thursday, Houston on Sunday, Friday, and then Friday. Wrapping it up in Madison Square Garden. On Sunday, mm-hmm. I'm going to go loss, win. Raptors finish sixth. What are you going?
No, really?
Yeah.
Listen, Atlanta's been playing really good.
That is on my mind.
I'm going to say win. No, I'm going to say loss against Atlanta, win against Philadelphia, win against Houston. Win against New York.
So that would get the Raptors to fifth. If Chicago does indeed go 2-2.
But like obviously
the last game.
That's assuming that the roster is playing.
Yeah, no, I mean I think the last game is impossible to predict. Like the Houston game is very
even that Houston game, I don't know what will be happening.
Well, with the Raptors, we don't know what's going to happen otherwise.
Yeah, they've made it a habit of confusing us. Yeah,
and just so people know, the Cavaliers end the season in Orlando on Tuesday, in Brooklyn on Friday, and home to the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday.
It's a tough way to close a season.
Yeah.
Regular season.
But, you know, I mean, the Nets will be playing for something almost surely. Mm-hmm. Whether they care about it, who knows? The Bucks very well might not be playing for something. They very well might be playing for something. Again, what do these teams care about? That's the new layer. It's like not only do they have something to play for, but do they care about the thing they have to play for? That's where we are now.
I think that if you're a team that's not making it to the postseason, you have quote unquote nothing to play for. You need to show up and you need to give it everything just for your pride. That's what I think.
I agree, but we're not even talking about those teams. We're talking about the teams that are making the playoffs.
I'm talking about the teams that are not.
Okay, so you want to talk about you want to talk about the Tampa Tank then?
Listen, you put all the other teams in a different country for a year away from their fan base and let them be booed in their home arena, and then we'll talk.
All right. So the Raptors are special, and they get to be competitive when it's useful to them. But all other teams should be competitive all the times. Got it. No, I'm just like, that's fair. There is a conspiracy against the Raptors and Canada as a whole, as perpetrated by the NBA.
There is not a conspiracy against the Raptors. But I will say that I do think that that was just like that's never going to happen again, hopefully, that a team will need to be relocated for the reason that it was. That was just an out of the ordinary.
No, and the Raptors were in the right. I believe they did the absolute right thing. We don't need to relitigate this. If the league wants to get rid of tanking, they need to remove incentives to lose games. And that goes up and down the standings. But
so when we talk to you next week, the season, the regular season will be have concluded. We will know where the Raptors have finished.
We will.
What do you think? Sixth or fifth?
I'm predicting sixth. I predict okay. that they and the Bulls both go 2-2. I predict the Cavaliers. It doesn't matter what the Cavaliers will do. They'll probably finish seventh.
Apparently my math that I didn't keep track of means I think they'll be fifth. We will see.
Yeah.
Perhaps subconsciously I've been wanting to make my preseason prediction correct. So we'll see next week.
Most importantly, where will I be flying to? That's what everybody wants to know. And let me tell you about hotel prices during the Boston Marathon, Holly.
Yeah.
They're expensive. We're not going to predict that because we have a difficult enough time predicting what the Raptors are going to do, the team we watch every game. Holly, any final special correspondent news before we say goodbye to the people?
Oh my goodness, we have Melbourne coming up this week. I'm so excited. It's my dream race time. The race time is going to be at 12:50 a.m. on Saturday night, Sunday morning, Saturday night. That's like a dream time for me. I don't have to wake up early. I don't have to stress about setting my alarm and potentially oversleeping. It's going to be a dream. I can't wait for qualifying on Thursday and Friday. Very, very excited. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, the Raptors play at 7 p.m. that night. That game was did not have a time until Sunday night.
On Sunday.
Yeah, that night. But I get when someone, anyway, we don't have to talk about your sleeping patterns. Holly, we'll get the full report on Melbourne next week from you. We'll also talk about the Toronto Raptors, likely, hopefully, heading to the playoffs. And we'll have an actual playoff series to break down. No more hypotheticals. Hopefully.
Wow. We did it. We almost did it. By next week, we will have made it.
We will have done it. Holly, thank you so much. As always, a pleasure for me and hopefully for like half the listeners.
Hopefully. So I'm just replaying the fact that I spent 15 minutes talking about being clumsy and now realizing that in fact, maybe my whole life I've just been thinking I'm not a clumsy person.
We've sent Holly into a major
tailspin over here. Yeah.
Huge spiral. As for the rest of you, enjoy your week. Hopefully we get some nice weather leading in to a fun springtime in Toronto, sporting and otherwise. Leafs head into the playoffs, Raptors head into the playoffs, Jays are back, Toronto FC up and going. Read all about all those things at theathletic.com.
Subscribe to theathletic.com.
Until then, enjoy your games. Hopefully you've had a chance to emotionally come down from Kyle Lowry night, and we will see you next week. See ya!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.